Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to ProWrestling.net Live. I am Jason Powell. I will be joined today by Will Pruitt. We will be taking your phone calls coming out of the WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view event. You can talk about Extreme Rules, Money in the Bank, Impact Wrestling, Ring of Honor, whatever is on your mind today. The number to join us, 773-897-6321. We are here the Mondays after WWE pay-per-view events live. Of course, we have free daily audio content available at pwaudio.net. But the Mondays after the WWE pay-per-view events, we are live as we are today. And as far as Money in the Bank, Extreme Rules is concerned, I graded the show at a C last night. Just found it to be in the middle, and I thought it was saved by the five-way main event. I didn't find much extreme about the Extreme Rules show. And I'm not big on needing a bunch of garbage matches and things like that. But if you're going to build something as extreme, well, the most extreme match on the show was probably the kendo stick on a pole match. Even the cage match didn't feel all that extreme. Not that there weren't some, you know, Jeff Hardy's big dive and things like that, but as far as, like, it's not what I think of when I think of extreme. And that wasn't even the biggest flaw with it, but we have a lot to talk about today, and joining me to do so is .NET staffer Will Pruitt. You can follow him online at Will Pruitt, but remember, it's one L when you spell at Will Pruitt, to follow him on Twitter. Will, I know you are on the road as we chat. Hopefully we're going to get a good connection here, but your thoughts on WWE Extreme Rules?
It wasn't a very good show. I would go back and watch the main event again, but even that wasn't amazing. It was really fun, and the end of it really picked up steam the way WWE multi-man matches tend to do. But for the most part, up until the last about 10 minutes of the main event, the show was nothing. The show was boring. The show told illogical stories. I am pretty down on the Extreme Rules show.
How are you as far as Samoa Joe becoming number one contender? I guess one of the positives of the show is if you were able to avoid the betting lines, I think there was some real mystery as far as the outcome. Roman Reigns, I think you could kind of go, they're probably not going to give that match away. They're probably saving that for WrestleMania. So the other four seem to be in play. Did that suspense help? And just your overall thoughts on Joe now facing Brock Lesnar at Great Balls of Fire.
That suspense definitely helped. I am someone that did manage to avoid the betting lines going in, and I really enjoyed those last few minutes of the main event where it looked like anyone but Roman Reigns could win. I was with you in that I think they're saving Roman Reigns for a show not named Great Balls of Fire. And although him saying it in promos would be just priceless, I think Joe's a good choice. I want to see how that match turns out. I want to see if we get motivated, excited Brock Lesnar, or if we get the Brock Lesnar that faced Dean Ambrose at WrestleMania 32 that just wanted to do a bunch of suplexes and sit around, because unmotivated Brock is really boring, and Brock hasn't had to have a real match since, what, SummerSlam? The one against Randy?
Goldberg and Lesnar was more than I think we expected it to be, but I know what you're saying, you know, at WrestleMania.
Yeah, it was still, it was two guys doing two moves back and forth to each other in a lot of ways. I think it was good and it was a great use, but I don't think Samoa Joe versus Brock Lesnar can go 5 minutes and be called good by most people.
Is this a dream match?
No. Maybe in 2005, 2006 it would have been. I think both guys are a little past their prime. I'm very down on the concept of Brock Lesnar currently, so maybe that's coloring my view a lot, but I wouldn't call it a dream match. It's a cool match. I'm excited that it's happening, but I don't think of it as like something that I would have like booked out fantasy wise in the last like 5 years were I a younger wrestling fan.
Well, for me it is, you know, when Joe ended up going to NXT, it was like, hey, maybe we see that match someday. And I'd really like to see that. Now I've also said at this point, I stand by it. I'd rather see Joe on the SmackDown brand, where he can be the biggest badass on the brand. On the Raw side of things, he feels like he's behind Lesnar, Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns on that badass pecking order, where SmackDown really doesn't have one on the heel side. Baron Corbin, I guess, is the closest thing they have to fitting that role, and he's still very much a work in progress. But here we are. We're getting the match finally after all these years, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think that it so much is going to hinge on the build to this. It was a theme of my pay-per-view preview again this month, that WWE, just especially on the Raw side, you can look at the lineup and go, hey, this looks like a pretty good show, but why don't I feel this way without kind of looking at the lineup? It's because they don't do a great job of storytelling. It's one of the reasons I was fearful of Joe, not fearful, but just I didn't want to see Joe get this title shot now, because it feels like, well, Braun Strowman got injured. It's just kind of a one-off deal. And, you know, I'd rather them do it at a time where, no, they're serious about this. This is the program on their mind, is Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar, and not just for the month, that they want to do this. You go into it thinking, like, well, they could go, you know, they could have a title change. They could stretch this out into a multi-month program. And I don't feel that way right now. I kind of feel like it's one and done. But as I said last night on the audio review with Jake Barnett, that's available exclusively for members, this might be one of the only times that there's a chance for them to do Joe and Lesnar, because Lesnar's deal is up after WrestleMania next year. And so if it is kind of, well, it's now or never, if they've got Lesnar's plans kind of laid out between SummerSlam and Mania and they don't include Joe, I will take it. But I hope that they do a good job with the build. And Will, as far-fetched as it seems, I really wish Paul Heyman was in charge of this build. I think this is something that Paul Heyman, you know, just knowing his taste, I think he would be excited by this and promoting this match, setting it up, and doing a lot of cool video packages, sit-down interviews and things like that. Do you think they're going to pull this off? Do you think they're going to be able to make Samoa Joe, who just was pinned not that long ago by Seth Rollins in kind of fluky fashion, who gets beat up on a weekly basis by Bray Wyatt, are they going to convince us going into Great Balls of Fire that Samoa Joe has a chance to beat Brock Lesnar?
That is a very good question. I think Paul Heyman, the producer being in charge of the build, would do a really good job. I can't say I'm excited for Paul Heyman, the advocate, manager, whatever it is right now, because he's going to come out, he's going to list through his catchphrases, say some suplex repeat, and Brock Lesnar is going to bounce next to him, and that's the build for this match. I don't have a ton of confidence in Samoa Joe, the way WWE has used him as a promo to get more out of Heyman than that, because they really like yelling Joe, apparently, and yelling Joe is not the most compelling version of Samoa Joe, and WWE has used him to yell a lot. It's actually kind of strange to me that they've used Yelling Joe as much as they have. So I'm not confident that the build will be great, and some of that is I've watched Raw for the last 6 months. I know how they build things, and I feel like hedging my bets and saying it won't be great is the smartest thing I can do.
773-897-6321 is the number to call. Remember, once you call in, you can listen. You can be in listen-only mode. That's fine. But if you want to join us on the show, you hit 1 on your phone. That lets us know that you want in the queue, and we will get to your call just as we will be getting to 248 momentarily. With Joe, I think Paul Heyman is going to be motivated here, being, you know, in the advocate role you speak of. I think he's going to have to reverse course a little bit. One of the questions I asked Jake last night was whether he felt like there was a change in plans, because Paul Heyman came out and cut that promo labeling Joe and everyone other than Finn Balor as just a victim, making it seem like they're, you know, insignificant when it comes to facing Lesnar. Now, Roman Reigns was included in that. So it's but I mean, he almost has to reverse course here a little bit going into the match with Joe. I'll ask you the same question. Do you think this was a swerve, or do you think, they were going to go with Balor and they changed plans, went with Joe?
I think it's possible that they have Balor set up for, like, that the Balor thing was to plant the seeds longer term. I think they will eventually get to paying off the Balor was the first Universal Champion, now he's getting a shot thing. So I would say it was just a tease for later down the line. I'm honestly not convinced that we don't just get Brock Lesnar squashing Samoa Joe.
To be completely honest with you, the same way we've seen, you know, Brock's like the Brock House Show matches that we've seen against Luke Harper, Kofi Kingston, Big Show, those guys on the network. I'm not convinced that that's not all they do with Samoa Joe here, which would be super disappointing. But they are they're on that Brock Lesnar train.
Yeah, I would really like this to be, you know, if Lesnar wins, so be it. But I want Joe to come out of this in a way where people are looking at him as he gains something. You know, they gain respect for him if they're a casual viewer in terms of what he can do. You know, because yeah, he's beat up Seth Rollins here and there, and he sometimes he cuts the good promos, and sometimes he yells, as you said. But I'd really like this to be, man, Joe took Brock to the limit. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a 30-minute match. You're not going to have that with Brock Lesnar. But just a good competitive match, and if Brock goes over in the end, so be it. If they do a screwy finish with Braun Strowman getting involved or something, cool. But I want Joe to gain something from this, and I think it would be a big mistake. He would really, you know, I list him fourth on the pecking order of Raw badasses, and as just as far as the storylines are concerned, and I do fear that would just really move him. There'd be a significant gap. I don't know that anyone would suddenly surpass him, but there'd be a huge gap between him and that big three. Let's go to the phone lines. Again, 773-897-6321 is a number to call if you want to join us. Hit 1 on your phone, as 248 did. 248, is this you?
You know it is. Mr.
Rabbit. Yes, Mr. Rabbit from the Rabbit Hole, the self-proclaimed number one poster of the .net Members Forum. What's up, Rabbit?
Well, I got a few gripes I want to get off my shoulder. Number one, WWE totally destroyed the Bayley character. Just totally destroyed her. I mean,
well, hopefully it's by design.
Any little kid that was watching last night would have probably given up on by now, because they just destroyed everything that was good about her in NXT. I mean, it just really pisses me off that they that Vince just totally didn't care about the character.
Well, let me and Will tackle that one. We'll start there, Will. Do you agree? Was Bayley destroyed last night in terms of in the manner in which Rabbit is discussing? Have they ruined Bayley?
Bayley, I think, had a lot of damage dealt to her when she participated in a 5-on-1 attack on an episode of SmackDown, and when she said, screw you, I'm keeping the title. Hell no, or hell no, I'm the women's champion, after it was shown that she won the title unfairly. And I think they just haven't rebounded from that. Last night was really weird. I can't think of a worse story to tell with Bayley than Bayley can't get extreme. See? No, really, she can't. She's going to be very bad at this. Because that's what they told. So I wouldn't say totally ruined. I would say did a lot of damage to and will have a hard time coming back from it, especially if Bayley is in the really uneven and bad booking of the Raw Women's Division over since the Superstar Shakeup. The only person who seems to be surviving it is Alexa Bliss, who is a fantastic talent, and I think is surviving it just based on the fact that she is great alone, because she's not getting any help from the writers either.
Yeah, Rabin, my quick take on this is it didn't look good for her last night, but I'm hopeful that it's because of the things Will just talked about. Bayley came up and her character was extremely confident. It went against what they did with her in NXT, where she lacked that confidence, and there was an endearing quality to that. She was the lovable Bayley character. You rooted for her. You wanted her to find that confidence. They didn't hit the reset button, and I heard from a lot of people that thought they were doing great things with Bayley, and why would they hit the reset button when so many of us saw her in NXT? And it's like, well, because you can have the best of both worlds. You can have her lack confidence now that she's on the main roster. You don't have to completely reset it, but you can get those main roster fans who aren't watching NXT up to date with the character. Let them feel like they're getting on board with the character you fell in love with. They didn't do that. And I'm hopeful that the approach they took last night is basically stripping that character of her confidence and making her start from the bottom. It doesn't mean it's going to be as good as it could have been. I think, as Will said, they've made a lot of major mistakes. I don't know that there is a quick fix to this problem. I don't know that she's ever going to be as money as she should have been when they called her up. But hopefully that's what's happening here, and it's not just them completely giving up. But I think we'll have a better idea coming out of tonight's show, Rabbit. What else did you have on your mind? It sounded like you had some other
gripes. Okay, next I wanted to mention And here's the thing. I think there's one way they could save Bayley. And this is, you're going to probably call me crazy. But in NXT, all they have to do for Bayley, I think, to semi bring it back is get Carmella to come over from SmackDown and we put them back together for Bayley.
Will,
I don't think that's a good idea, especially given that there's not a women's tag division. That to me is really kind of, I think that would be strange at best, and I don't think it would save Bayley despite the charming social media posts that they created once upon a time.
Yeah, Brad,
yeah,
I
was thinking that
was,
I remembered all that, and I thought, well, maybe bringing her back with Carmella might work.
Any non-Bayley gripe that you had
today?
Well,
I'm jumping at straws here on Bayley, trying to figure out ways to save her.
Well, I think I just gave you one way they can do it, where the confidence is gone. Because she did. She just came in so confident, and it was like she belonged there. The Bayley we saw in NXT never seemed like, you know, it took a long time for her to find that confidence. And I think that's a story that younger fans can get behind, that fans can start to like her. You know, the fans who did like her can start to like her again. When Bayley is booed, I mean, I think there are fans who just only saw her on the main roster, aren't digging it, don't really get it, and they're booing her. But I also think there's some people in that mix who are booing not because they dislike the person playing the character, they just don't like what has become of this character. And there's also going to be some who like Alexa Bliss a lot, too. But they need to find a way to get this on track. I hope they do. It's one that Will and I and other .NET staffers have talked about. Boy, when that character came up, get the Brinks truck ready because you can print money if they do it right. And here we are. They've done it completely wrong. And that's just kind of a theme with a number of the NXT talents. It doesn't feel like they've gotten as much out of them as the main roster as they could have. And I would put her very high on that long list, unfortunately, of NXT talent that just haven't quite clicked on the main roster the way we thought they would. What else, Rabbit? Anything else?
Yeah, one last thing. And that is, Will had made a remark about dream matches when he talked about Samoa Joe earlier. And it brought back something to me as a kid. When I was in San Francisco, Pat Patterson was the champion. I was thinking how cool it would be. My dream match in those days was to see Patterson put up the U.S. Championship in San Francisco against Backlund. I thought that would be so cool. Or even when the Samoans were in WWF, I was thinking how cool if Patterson and Stevens, the San Francisco champions, could defend the title against the WWF champions. You know, those to me were like dream matches as a kid growing up. But of course, they never did all that stuff. The only time they ever had mixed matches like that was when the NWA champ and the WWF champ met in Florida, and they had a couple of those. But other than that, they were never. It was always either a draw or something. They never
sure.
Titles never changed or anything. But it was cool to see these Super Bowl of wrestling things. Nowadays, you can't get any of that anymore. I mean, I don't think there's that many dream matches we could really put together anymore on my lot.
Well, Rabbit, I thank you as always for the call, my friend. And Will, I mean, clearly he's forgetting that John Cena-Randy Orton title unification match we had a December or two ago.
I think that was this coming December. That will have been 4 Decembers ago, I think.
Sure.
We're old, essentially.
It all just kind of it all starts to blend together.
Yeah. Every TLC match is essentially the same.
Yeah, kind of. And Extreme Rules doesn't get extreme anymore. It's been full. Wow. I guess, yeah, because they just reunified the titles. Man, I don't know. I can't keep those kind of things straight. But and no, that didn't feel like a dream match at the time. It felt like they were rushing into unifying the championship for no real great reason. We'll take the next call here in just a second. Again, the number is 773-897-6321. I am Jason Powell. He is Will Pruitt. This is ProWrestling.net Live. Before I forget, I believe I am next up on the PW Torch livecast that will be airing Wednesday at noon Central, 1 Eastern time at pwtorchlivecast.com. I'll be on the air with Wade Keller. Next in line, and again, if you want to join us on the show, once you call in, be sure to hit 1 on your phone so that we know you want to talk to us and you're not just in listen-only mode. Let's go now to 434. Who is this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. Johnny Fairplay. Wow.
Johnny Fairplay. What's going on? From Rabbit to Fairplay. Boy, Will, this is an old show.
This is an all-star lineup.
I don't know if I'd use those exact words, but thanks. So, getting back to the Bayley Alexa Bliss match, do you think it's possible that the kendo stick came down earlier than planned, and Alexa Bliss being as savvy ring-wise as she is mic-wise was just like, hey, let's just skip to the part where I beat the crap out of you with the stick?
I didn't notice anything, Will, but, you know, I also have a laptop in front of me. Anything jump out at you?
Not really. I thought that might be possible at one point, but then I remembered the spot with Bayley and Alexa both outside the ring after the stick fell, where Bayley used her body to block Alexa from getting to it. And
yeah,
that seems like a planned spot, and that kind of told me, oh, no, stick came down like it should have.
That was like a 5-minute match. The pay-per-view kind of ended 15 minutes early. So I just think that spot, you know, they might have done that spot kind of fast. I mean, this is your life segment. I mean, I talked with Wade on the live cast last week. I could see guys or girls just walking off out of the ring. I mean, that was just so bad. And Alexis's presence, she's just like, nope, I'm going to go through this. I'm great. I know I'm great. And, you know, and that's savvy. And I think that, you know, if the kendo stick did come down early, I could see her being, yeah, let's just go to my stuff. and Bailey's like, okay, I mean, well, I have stuff. It's fine. My stuff is the good stuff. You know, and went from there. I don't know. I mean, she just sees it. I think Alexa Bliss is great. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean. I think that the girl knows how to look out for herself and is doing a tremendous job thus far.
Well, I'd have to go back and watch that spot again to see if it looked like it came down accidentally. I do know that it was awkwardly low. Alexa was standing on the middle rope, all 5 feet of her, and she had to act like she couldn't grab the kendo stick. It was kind of embarrassing.
5 feet?
Well, that's what they say. I mean, they mention it once or twice. You know, they try not to bring it up a lot, but 5 feet of fury and diminutive.
Okay.
And the very first moment she was drafted to the main roster, Renee Young referred to her as a little nugget. So, yeah, they may have mentioned it.
Okay, just making sure.
Oh, and by the way, Johnny, what you call a pay-per-view ending 15 minutes early, SmackDown calls a pay-per-view ending 15 minutes late. So there is that. I didn't look at it like, oh man, this show ended really early.
Well, my friends are looking forward to the Sunday night's main event, 90-minute special known as Money in the Bank, coming up in 2 weeks.
Well, two Money in the Bank matches, Jinder and Randy. I'm guessing they'll get the tag titles on the New Day and the Usos. I'm going to guess that one goes over 2.5 hours, Sean. Not by much, but I'm going to take the over.
Yeah, I like 90 minutes. 90 minutes sounds like a perfect Sunday night for me. I'm an old dude, so I don't.
I wouldn't have complained last night. Like, I mean, we don't need the 1 hour kickoff show. We could have done without that match. I know you like the Titus brand more than most people, but you're also insane.
Why? Let's not go crazy. I appreciate some of the particulars of it. So, am I a fan of the Titus brand? No. So, but yeah, I guess maybe more than some, but I still don't like it. So don't want me there.
All right. I could have done without the mixed tag match. Yeah, there was a lot I could have. Yeah, an hour and a half would have been suffice last night. What else, Fairplay?
Oh, that's it. I had 5 people over last night, and we were all in kind of total agreement that we thought the stick came down early, and that was, I mean, you know, it could have been a burial. You know, I don't. You know, and hopefully you're right. Like, you know, let's deconstruct Bayley to reconstruct. But, I mean, I don't know. As I said, five people came together with the same conclusion that Stick came down early. So, and if that's the case, I think that explains a lot. So, or, you know, maybe your theory is right, and I can live with that too. So let's break her down to build her up.
Well, I would be remiss if I did not say, in the case of baby Madison, Johnny, you are the father. Congratulations on the birth of your daughter, my man.
Thank you very much. It's good news. Good stuff. Good.
Mom
good,
and daughter doing
stuff.
Well.
They actually just left 2 hours ago from Michigan until July 4th. So I will be without both.
So they're doing great.
Babies. Yeah, yeah. newly single, kid free. You know, life's great. And
it was
them back,
a planned
so.
Trip. It wasn't like I'm out of here. This was a planned trip, everyone.
No, they have baby showers, and then her folks have a cabin in Michigan. Me and my other daughter are heading up right around July 4th, so we'll be meeting them then. So.
And then you're staying there, and they're coming home.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, shoot, cabin in Higgins Lake sounds like a blast. I mean, I've been 2 years now, and yeah, it's great. So it's not too hot, not too cool, just right. I mean, you know, It's the porridge of lakes.
That's Midwest living, my man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm jealous. So we get I think it's 90 degrees tomorrow here. So there you go. It is what it is.
Well, thank you very much.
But anyway, real quick, I like the pay per view. I give it a B plus. I mean, I you know there was major implications. So titles changed hands, and as I said, I had five people over, and no one majorly complained. So I think that was good.
Yeah. I didn't like it as much as you did, but it's all good. And you're not even drinking anymore, so that we can't even blame that.
Well, no, I just asked for time to go by. I mean, like, I wasn't sitting there staring at my watch going, when are these people leaving? And that's what marks a bad pay-per-view for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, I wasn't dreading it. Right. I mean, like, cool, man. I appreciate the call. Even like the Hardy Cage match, it was like the rules were baffling. It didn't make any sense, but Will, it still held my interest. The crowd was into it. They seemed confused by the finish, but they didn't have Michael Cole explaining it to them at the last minute. Your thoughts on that whole cage match mess?
It was kind of odd. I mean, you could tell they were planning this finish or the weird finish with Jeff getting out and then going back in, because from the very beginning, Michael Cole was heavily telegraphing both members have to touch the floor and all that. I think the fans were into it because they're into the Hardys, and, you know, the Hardys are still on their kind of first tour around the country with WWE before coming back, so you're going to have some instant emotional investment from that, but I didn't find it great. I thought it was all right in an okay way to get the titles back onto Sheamus and Cesaro, but nothing like today. I guess I'm gauging it on like if I want to rewatch this or find it worthwhile or would recommend someone else watch it. Just the main event, like that. I literally would say fast forward to the after the entrances for the main event and just watch from then on.
It's and that's a fair assessment. I mean, I said like the last three matches of the show I would watch back if you're somebody who just, like, doesn't have time, whatever. But if you really, I mean, if you only have time for a match, make it the main event, clearly, that was very good. And, yeah, it just, it wasn't a great show. It just was a below-average show, kind of saved by the main event. I will say on the Hardys, well, your thoughts on the possibility that this leads to them being broken, right? That maybe it's not tonight or anything, but if they do get the rights to the gimmick from Impact Wrestling, that's the road they're going down now, is that the Hardys, now that they've lost the titles, bad things are going to happen. Somehow they're going to be broken.
I think it's more likely to happen now that they're not the champions than them being the champions.
Yeah.
And it kind of couldn't happen fast enough because Matt Hardy's pants are getting worse by the week.
His what are?
His pants. Like, he was wearing some weird green pants the other day on Raw. Like, what he had on last night were ridiculous. Like, just watch Matt Hardy's pants for a while, and you'll see, like, why he needs to have a gimmick that's not just, I'm 2000 and, or, you know, 2001 Matt Hardy again.
I did speak with someone this morning who said that it is not completely broken down between the Hardys and Impact Wrestling, despite the last public statements by both sides, making it seem like, you know, they had Ed Nordholm getting out there and then Rebbe firing back and things look pretty ugly there. I'm actually told that by someone in the know that, yeah, you know, it's they're still discussing this as of this person's last update, and it seemed like things were moving in that direction. Now, you never know what's going to change that, but, I mean, Will, at this point, what does Impact have to gain? You know, don't you just kind of want this to be over and done with and, you know, get what you can out of it, I guess, but just put this behind you so you never have to put up with angry Rebbe tweets ever again?
Yeah, it's still a PR disaster for the new team at Impact, which is sad because it started them off on such a negative foot with a lot of fans, and especially the kinds of fans Impact needs to win back. They can talk about casual fans all they want. They don't have that many people watching their show. If they can get one more person, casual, hardcore, whatever, watching, that is a big benefit for TNA. For Impact Wrestling, soon to be Global Force Wrestling, maybe, sort of, for Global Impact Force Wrestling. So hopefully they can get it behind them.
773-897-6321 is the number to call. Press 1 on your phone if you would like to chat with us. And we do have some member-submitted questions from people who couldn't listen live today. There's this little thing called Work on Mondays that people do. I know it's crazy, but Jeremy J. Moss Moses from Cincy kind of echoed your thoughts. He just asked if either one of us have any faith in Brock to make Joe look good. He says, I personally do not, because with Brock it always seemed to be suplex, 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 F5, splat, pin. Will, you've kind of made it seem like that's your fear, that that's going to be basically how the match goes?
Yeah, I just don't believe they're going to make Joe look like look the way John Cena or even Roman Reigns got to against Brock Lesnar, where he stands his own. I see it as much more being a Brock Lesnar murders that human type of match.
J-Moss also says, would I be correct in believing they can still get to Brock against Finn at SummerSlam? He said they did foreshadow it pretty heavily in the run-up to last night. So he still thinks there's a chance of Lesnar against Balor, kind of goes against the strong suspicion that it's going to be Lesnar and Braun Strowman. Where do you think they stand on that?
I think that Brock versus Finn could be a backup plan, or even the plan they're going to go with at SummerSlam, or Brock versus Finn, sorry, not Brock versus Roman. But then you free up Roman Reigns to take on Braun Strowman, and you can kind of conclude that feud at SummerSlam and propel them forward. And whatever the next show Brock is on, he can face Strowman there. So you can get I think this may be a way that you can get the most out of Strowman, the most out of Roman, the most out of Finn, and the most out of Brock Lesnar.
I still think they're going Strowman, but it would explain why Paul Heyman made that comment, sort of. I guess I don't know why they laid it on so heavy with Finn coming from Heyman, especially. I mean, none of it really made sense when you look back on it. The timing, he delivered this promo a week after one-armed Roman Reigns had pinned Finn Balor clean, and it was moments before Finn Balor then had a competitive match that he eventually won over a tag team wrestler in Carl Anderson. So the promo didn't really ring true. So maybe he's onto something where it's more, and you kind of touched on this too, long-term foreshadowing from Paul Heyman. But I don't know if SummerSlam is the direction they're going in. I'll tell you what, Will, I'm going to be pissed if we find out, like, yeah, it's, you know, for whatever reason, Strowman can't go, or it's going to be Strowman facing Roman Reigns again, and that slot is free, and they go with Balor. Nothing against Balor. I look forward to seeing Balor at some point with Brock Lesnar if they get around to that match too. But if you have back-to-back months for Brock Lesnar free, don't you find a way to go back to Joe and Brock Lesnar?
It depends. Do you want Joe and Brock Lesnar to be a big feud, or do you want it to be Brock Lesnar squashes this guy we don't care about?
I know what I want.
I mean, it says a lot about WWE's perception of Samoa Joe, what they do there. And I think they definitely think he's good. I don't think they see Samoa Joe on that level of Brock Lesnar. I think their ranking of monsters on the Raw roster is just like yours, which means that there is a big gap between the Brock Lesnar tier and the Samoa Joe tier.
I mean, is there any chance they're going to look at the ratings and all the other indicators and say, boy, you know, we really could shake things up here. I mean, is that what it would take for, in order for Joe to have a realistic chance to come out of this match as champion, if they just wanted to blindside people? Well, they think it's going to be Lesnar and Reigns at Mania. We'll show them, at least temporarily, we'll do a title change.
I think that'd be a smart thing to do. Brock Lesnar title reigns are death. Like, it's absurdly boring. Brock Lesnar doesn't show up for 2 months, and guys just kind of fight around the top of the card, loosely mentioning Brock Lesnar, and that's how almost every feud is built. It's the same thing that happened at the end of 2014 when Brock Lesnar was WWE champion and missing from TV for the entire end of that year, and we're seeing it now, and they're really struggling, and I think it takes away from Raw. It makes everyone on Raw seem less than Brock in a bad, bad way, because Brock is only around occasionally. Brock usually wins when he's around, and it's one of the key things keeping WWE from being able to make new stars right now.
773-897-6321 is a number to call us. You can join us live on the show by pressing 1 on your phone. So if you're on hold going, hey, why aren't you getting to me? Well, it's because you probably didn't hit 1 on your phone, so we don't know that you want to chat with us. We assume you're in listen-only mode. It'd be kind of rude just to go to you and, like, have you try to force you to make up a question on the spot. So that's the way you get in to chat with us. Will, you want people to look at your thing. Vince McMahon would appreciate that humor. Tell people about your thing.
That's appropriate. It runs on the site every new thing, and it's essentially kind of a weekly roundup, normally with one big point and then a bunch of little items tossed in, like matches I found essential from that week, responding to comments and emails from readers, and as always, a Shane McMahon GIF of the week, because how could I not?
Right. Yeah, that is running now Thursdays on .net. Usually mid-afternoon or so, you can find Will Pruitt's new thing. We could have called it the Thursday thing. I know you're big on alliteration.
Yeah, I thought about just the weekly Will, or Will's week in wrestling, and that all sounded really hackish to me at best. I'm still trying to think of an actual good permanent name for this, but I haven't arrived at one.
Submit your name suggestions at Will Pruitt on Twitter with 1L, everybody. That is Thursdays, and of course I do want to take a moment to tell you about ProWrestling.net. The website updated constantly. We had, of course, live coverage of the pay-per-view last night, and even the kickoff show, the needlessly long kickoff show, gets covered. So, if especially during football season, if you're like me and you have no interest in watching the kickoff show for an hour, well, I take one for the team. I actually watch both, but I probably shouldn't say that. But I'm still watching the end of those games. But we do have all the live coverage of the major pay-per-view events, including, I say this, maybe tentatively, Slammiversary, because it's on 4th of July weekend, man, and there's also that New Japan show running opposite, but the plan is to cover Impact Wrestling Slammiversary on July 2nd, I believe it is, and also Ring of Honor before that, Money in the Bank coming up, and after every major pay-per-view is an audio review. For the WWE shows, Jake Barnett and I get together last night, just shy of an hour. We spent talking about the WWE Extreme Rules event. And we also have television show reviews for Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Lucha Underground, now that it's back. John Moore handles the coverage as well as the audio reviews of that show. He even did a hit list on a show with one match. I was amazed, but he pulled it off. And let's see, Ring of Honor, if I didn't mention that, we're doing an Impact Wrestling as well. So all the major television shows reviewed in audio form. You guys hear some of those on the All Access side at pwaudio.net. But the members hear them each and every week. So if you were interested in, maybe you need anywhere from a 20-minute hour recap of just depending on the show. Obviously, if it's a 1-hour show, it's going to be a little bit briefer. We got you covered. It is the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net. And if you were interested in membership, visit our main page, ProWrestling.net. Click into the sign-up area, and you're going to find 3 different pricing options available. If you have any questions on anything at all, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, at ProWrestlingNet, or email me at dotnetjson@gmail.com. That's .net Jason @gmail.com. And I think tonight, you know what? I think I'm going to bounce right back here at midnight for you guys and give you the all-access audio review of tonight's Raw. So that means members are going to be hearing Tuesday's SmackDown review as an exclusive audio show. So, yeah, look for that later tonight. If you're listening live, you're listening on delay, you're going to get a double whammy of all-access audio with the ProWrestling.net live show and then my full-length review of WWE Raw. And remember, the members hear that audio review every Monday night. And so if you enjoy the full-length audio reviews of the show, ProWrestling.net membership is the way to go. Visit the main page, ProWrestling.net. Let's see here. The number to call again, everybody, if you want to join us on the show, is 773-897-6321. And then hit 1 on your phone. That's what 631 did to get through. 631, who is this? Where are you calling from?
Jason, it's Mike from Buffalo. How's it going today?
Hey, Mike from Buffalo. Always good to hear from you. What's up today?
Oh, thanks. Nothing. So I haven't had a chance to listen to the whole show yet. I'm going to listen to it later on. So I'm not sure if you covered this. I hope you didn't. But I just want to talk about some of the things from last night. And I enjoyed the pay-per-view for the most part, like match by match. But some of the things drive me nuts. And I don't know if it's Vince doesn't care or if he just, like, he just doesn't remember or I don't know what's going on. But some of the stipulations weren't really playing. I don't know. I didn't feel like they were playing a factor into some of the matches. Like, I don't understand, and I saw you were talking about it in your live coverage on the website last night, but the stipulation with the cage match with both guys had to touch the floor at the same time or whatever, like both men had to touch the floor eventually, not at the same time. I felt like the announcers weren't helping a lot with some of the way they called some of the matches too. But I don't know. I guess it's good to be different, but I don't really understand that rule. And then, you know, the cage match logic is just, it drives me nuts watching Matt Hardy, like, step over Sheamus and Cesaro to go to a corner to climb up the cage when he could have just went to the door where he had a clear shot of the door, you know, and stuff like that. And then, like, in the submission match, the one part where Austin Aries is outside, or was it Neville? I don't remember. But the ref is counting the guy out. Like one, two, three. It's a submission match. Like, what happens if they counted to 10? Is the match over? I think you had to submit to lose. And then, I forgot what.
Oh, there's
one
more
of the
examples.
Other ones,
I know.
Yeah, there's a lot. I know, and I don't know if you covered those or not, Jason, today. So I don't know if I'm wasting your time, but I don't know. Some of those things. It's just. Does Vince, like, think we're stupid? Does he just, like, fly by the seat of his pants?
Yes.
Does he
yes, he does think, like, you are stupid.
Yeah, like, I just don't understand it. It just drove me absolutely nuts last night. Listening to the thing that drove me the most nuts was the ref during the Austin Aries and Neville match, counting out Aries or Neville, whoever it was. I couldn't take it. I had to get up and, like, leave the room. I got a beer. I went to the bathroom. I couldn't take the rest of that match because of that.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's really about it.
We did touch on the tag team match and the oddness of that. I will say this about the approach they took for the cage match. Basically, if you want to come up with these new and zany rules, well, turn them into a selling point of the match. Had they taken the time going in to explain what the rules were, then, all right, we can kind of prepare for it. The kickoff show team can actually kind of talk about the strategy of is it smart to escape whenever you can, or do you both try to leave together, things like that, and there really was none of it. They just kind of waited. I did think, Will, they did a good job at the start because they had both JoJo and Michael Cole immediately tell us that there's no pinfall, no submission, you have to escape the cage. I'll give them that one. But it's still, like, why wouldn't you just tell us going into the match? Make that, like I say, I mean, not everyone's going to go, hey, that's great. But if you have the broadcast team or Kurt Angle, somebody, put it in an enthusiastic manner, you can sell people on, oh, this is different, this is kind of unique, and have them looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am with you there. What I wish they would have done is make it more of, like, the strategy of the show, but especially going into it when that could have been talked about. I mean, you need that pre-show panel to talk for almost an hour. Give them something like that to talk about actual match strategy. And that's something WWE kind of shies away from. I think the caller's broader issue of there not being an internal logic to WWE matches, no one is sitting there from the writers to the agents to the wrestlers themselves. It's like no one is sitting there going, does this make sense both in terms of the character and in terms of the match and the best way to win the match? Does this work? And because that's not really done, you end up with a lot of moments that make you just scratch your head after a show going like, but why did this happen? How, like, why do they do this? And WWE, a company that this very week, over 3 days, is expecting fans to invest eight plus hours of time in their programming, is not willing to actually make sure it all makes sense. I find that really awful, and it's one of those only in professional wrestling kind of things with the quality control WWE puts in.
And, Mike, with the submission, you know, I wish they'd just kind of explain the rules there, too. I do wonder if sometimes they are intentionally vague about these things because they want to be able to come back to it and not feel like they've set precedent. You know, I don't know that Vince cares. He's probably going to – well, I don't remember, so no one else is going to. But the reason I'm a little more lenient on the count-out that you're talking about, I guess I wouldn't want a submission match to be completely no DQ where you can just – beat someone over the head without mercy, and then they, you know, you put them in a headlock and they can't move. You know what I'm saying? Where it, you almost need
it's
some
true.
Kind of a rule there. So I don't know that you need to have countouts, but I guess I'd like to have there be some sort of a structure there. It'd just be nice if they take the time to lay that out, even in print form in their previews. I might actually pay more attention to their previews, but you know, it's not like they're telling the WWE website writers the rules of this either. I'm guessing they have to kind of make it up as they go along. But Mike from Buffalo, do you have more?
No, that's about it. I mean, it could go on again about the Ambrose Miz match while I was while you guys were on hold. While you were talking about the other things, just about like basically the announcing and how I don't know, the announcing just drives me nuts too. So during the Miz and Ambrose match, you know, they were both outside, and Booker T is yelling, oh, but Ambrose, you got to get him in the ring to beat him. Well, no, he doesn't, A, because the DQ stipulation, so that's playing against Ambrose. And then, B, he's the champion. He doesn't need to get Miz back in the ring. He can just crawl back in the ring himself. But then again, that goes to what what you were saying about. It is about the writers and how they don't really understand the characters and maybe they don't really, you know, I guess they get soap opera writers or whoever, Hollywood writers, who don't know anything about, you know, professional wrestling and continuity and logic and things like that.
I want to defend Hollywood writers. I think most do actually know about continuity and logic, and most would probably tell better stories within the professional wrestling world. I honestly think it's a top-down philosophy because I think the writers that WWE hires for the most part are probably very talented and very good at writing and even get pro wrestling and have innovative ideas. But I think when it comes from the top down that the show's not supposed to make sense, you can't make the show make sense.
Very true.
Yeah, right.
Let me also jump in and defend Mike and say that with some of these things that happen in the ring, you know, the writers turn in their script and then it's up to the agent / producers to kind of make some sense of this in the ring as far as laying out the matches and things. So I don't even know that creatively you can blame the writers for some of these oddball occurrences that are happening that happened in the ring at Extreme Rules.
That's true. And it does always, at the end of the day, everything, outcomes, matches, everything falls on Vince. But overall, I do think the show was good. The matches themselves, the wrestlers, you know, they gave 110%. I always feel bad if I come on and or if I'm at home like crapping on something that's going on in the ring while they're, you know, putting their bodies on the line for us as fans, and you know, Jeff Hardy doing the ridiculous, I forget what they call the move, whatever it is, Swanton or whatever it's called from the top of the cage. I mean, you know, that's for us, and that's, you know, I appreciate that and the effort, especially in the main event. Those five guys worked really, really hard. But I mean, you know, other than that, that's about it.
All right, Michael. Oh, my pleasure. Always good to hear from you. Mike from Buffalo. Will, I do want to ask about something he said there. And then at 443, you're up next. When a football player scores a touchdown or makes a big, you know, takes a big hit in a game, whatever the case may be, we don't think necessarily, I mean, we'd like to think he's doing it for the fans, but Deep down we know he's doing it because he earns a good paycheck. Why are wrestlers the ones who are making all these sacrifices for us, the fans?
I'm not sure because I don't want to sound callous. I know professional wrestling itself is a dangerous art form.
Of course, yeah.
It's a really, like, and I get that. And guys train for years to be able to do it well. And WWE has the most talented roster of professional wrestlers that they've ever had. And I get that. But I think it's kind of a programmed in from WWE thing where it's always, we do this for you and we're here for you. And they kind of drive that home, especially with wrestlers. And I think that they kind of succeed on that PR point of making sure everyone knows it's for them and that wrestling is, you know, that everything done in the ring is for them, and whether they're heels or babyfaces, they're doing it for the fans. And I think it's just kind of WWE's PR spin that gets out there. And not that it isn't, and not that, like the caller said, I'm appreciative that guys do it, but like if every wrestler in the world decided not to, I'd be sad, but I'd be like, oh, there must not have been money left in wrestling, because I doubt you're doing that for nothing.
And I do think it's smart of the wrestlers to frame it that way too, you know, and because you're making a connection with your audience that way, you know, where if you have a non-heel come out and say, oh yeah, that triple indie moonsault that I did, well, yeah, I didn't do it for the fans. I did it because I want to climb the ladder and get into WWE and all the, you know, of course you kind of make it seem like you're doing this for the fans. If you are anything other than a heel, I guess is kind of the way to go. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole social media debate and all of that as far as whether they should be saying it online as heels, but that's for another show. But let's
you
go
and
Wade to
can talk about that on Wednesday.
I have a feeling we might. 443. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
This is Kevin calling from Baltimore. Can you hear me?
I can, Kevin. What's going on?
Okay. Yeah, so I was at the show last night. I was at Extreme Rules, and it was some things that kind of struck me as soon as I kind of got there. One of the things is it's kind of hard to gather the reactions that the wrestlers get because they play the entrance music so loud. It's been like a while. I think the last show that I went to that was in Baltimore, I know they get one often, but the last one that I had actually been to was the Raw. It was a couple years ago, I think the one with RVD. Came back for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view right before that pay-per-view when the Wyatts actually debuted that night. So it's been a while since I had been to a live show. But, like, the one thing that it's hard to tell, like, who's getting loud reactions or if it's just, like, people kind of cheering. Because they play the entrance music extremely loud for everybody. Like, when Miz came out to start the show, it was, like, it was a reaction, but you can't tell whether it's cheers or boos until, like, the match started to go back and forth and it was, like, chance for Miz and there was chance for Ambrose. So it was kind of, that was one of the main things that, like, I mean, I don't know how it sounded on TV, but when you're listening to it there, it's like, you can't really tell because they're drowning out so many of the reactions with a ton of loud theme music. So that was kind of weird. And then one of the things that kind of caught me off guard was, like, I know I read your report, you said Bailey got like 50, some like mix of boos and cheers. I mean, sitting there, it was just really boos. And that kind of shocked me. But I noticed when Alexa Bliss came out that it was like completely everything was like cheers for her. And I think a lot of, and I was listening to you guys kind of go back and forth about her. I think that her reactions have really kind of been bad because we matched up with Alexa Bliss. That was just my interpretation of it.
Yeah.
I think people like her so much that they kind of, it's just like you put them against someone that it's not equal footing, I guess people look at it like, and now people are really attached to Alexa Bliss instead of Bayley. I don't think everybody necessarily hates her, but I think one thing that did really make her look bad, and just watching the show, and I was just listening, you guys were talking about logic in the matches and making it look, you know, like it makes sense you're in a real fight. I'm watching the match, and it was kind of short. It came off really, really short. It was over very quickly, but Bailey got the kendo stick, and, like, Alexa Bliss was sitting in the corner, I think, or something like that, and she had the stick, and she's just looking at her, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Just hit her. What are you waiting on? And then she kicks her and then gets the stick. And then, like, people are booing her, and I'm like, that's the reason she's getting booed is because she's sitting here, you know, looking like a fool. Like, she gets the stick and goes to town on her, like, in a couple of seconds, and it's just like, if you would have did that, maybe people would look at you like you had some common sense. It was just like she just looked foolish having a stick in her hand and not using it. And I just was like, that just really didn't make sense to me. And then later on, like when the Hardys and Cesaro and Sheamus were fighting, and I'm like, Jeff Hardy got out the ring, and Sheamus is trying to go through the cage door. And I'm like, well, if you have any sense and you know the rules of the match, let Sheamus go through the door. Cesaro is laid out. Matt Hardy can go at it with Sheamus. I mean, Cesaro, while he's on the mat, you've beaten him every week on TV. Why wouldn't you just take the chances of you being able to outlast him? They make the wrestlers look stupid, and then they make us look stupid for sitting in the crowd looking at it. And it's like, it doesn't even make sense. You know, you're trying to keep him from going out the door, and you have the option of just letting him go out the door and then having a one-on-one match and then just taking chances from there. But I don't know. It's kind of stupid just watching some of the things. That, I mean, and then you sit there in the crowd and there's no announcers trying to make sense of it. It's really hard to watch.
Yeah. So did you have any clue that both guys had to be at ringside in the cage match? When Jeff Hardy went back to the ring,
Only because I had seen the matches before and I know that, you know, both guys got to get out the ring. But I've never seen anyone go back in the ring after being out. That was the first time I'd ever seen that before.
Yeah, so when he went back in, did you think, oh, he's legal again?
I thought that once he went back in, I mean, sitting with the fans and the crowd, everyone kind of assumed that he would get back involved only because it's Jeff Hardy and he's always going to come off the top of the cage at some point.
Right, exactly.
So it was like we knew something was going to happen, but once he got back in the ring, I didn't think that he would be a part of the match and have to be out again to be able to, you know, but once he got back in, I thought all bets were off at that point, honestly, because it was like he just entered the match, but I've never seen anyone do that.
Baltimore is a great wrestling town, and one of the observations I had last night, just watching the show on TV, it seemed like it was more of a pro-Roman crowd than a lot of places. Not that there weren't boos, but you could see a lot of people standing up, cheering for him and things like that. How was it in person for Roman Reigns?
And that's kind of the thing is, like, I don't know how it comes off on TV, but, I mean, it was loud boos there. I mean, they were, and it was funny because all of the wrestlers came out, and he obviously came out last, and there was, before he even came out, the boos started because you knew he was the last person to come out. So everyone else
right.
had decent reactions. So they were booing before he even came through the curtain. So it was just like everyone was prepared to boo him. But there was pockets of, like, people who were, let's go Roman. And this was before the show. Like, there were people chanting Cena for Cena. Well, he's clearly not going to be there. You know, there were people chanting for Roman. But he's getting a reaction. It might not be the reaction that they intended, but he's getting one. But also what I noticed with him is just like watching him throughout the show and through the match, it just comes off like he's like the I don't give a, you know, F type guy. And that's the character he's playing. And I kind of like it. Honestly, I think he's not really even pandering or catering to trying to get a reaction that, you know, we expect as a babyface. I think he's just playing his part. And his job is just to go out there, do what he does, and if they boo, they boo, they cheer, you're getting a reaction. And people want to see him one way or another, whether it's him getting beat up or it's him just being involved in a big match. I think that he's going to be – I think his charm is that people want to boo him, and whether it's like charm or not. But that's his gimmick at this point is like people want to see him get attacked, beat up. It's like – the guy from South Park, what was the guy that always gets beat up? But it was just
Kenny.
Like, that's the thing. Yeah, they just want to see him get attacked and beat up. And sure, it's not even, I don't think it's anything he could do that could get a reaction that's going to be positive at this point.
Well, I really appreciate the in-person perspective on the show. Anything else you'd like to add before we let you go?
What I would say is that Joe got a really good reaction coming in to the ring, and after winning, people were kind of surprised and happy to see that. Finn Balor, we had a really, really good reaction as well. The fans really enjoyed him and liked him. So he did pretty well. And the thing with the Cruiserweights, there was just, like, no reaction at all. And that's kind of disappointing because I think, like, Neville was really, really good. And I think that Austin Aries is really good. But I don't see him – They don't care. The fans really don't care, and it's kind of sad. But I think those guys are really good.
Well, very good. I appreciate the call. And Will, I think it's safe to say that one of the reasons the fans don't care about the cruiserweights is it feels like WWE doesn't care about the cruiserweights.
Oh, it definitely feels that way. And I really enjoyed the Rich Swann and Sasha Banks versus Noam Dar and Alicia Fox match last night, just in that it had the fun hometown reaction for Swann. It didn't overstay its welcome. It had a few really fun spots, but yeah, WWE shows us over and over again that cruiserweights aren't important. And they show it to us on 205 Live, where the show itself is just kind of a broken mess. And not broken in, like, the fun Hardys way. Broken in, like, the, oh, my God, is this really an hour every week? Why, oh, why, my God, is this happening? And, yeah, I think that they can do a lot better with that show. And actually, it wouldn't take much of many changes to make that show a really compelling hour of TV. And part of that is just giving the show itself some internal logic. And it doesn't have that. There's one belt. The same two guys have been fighting for that belt since late February, mid-March. And now we're sitting in June, and it's no wonder the show is boring.
Yeah, and they didn't even bother to make anyone in the meantime as, like, the next guy if they're done with Aries
and
Neville.
Maybe Tozawa.
Maybe.
Like, that's all I can think is the Kendrick feud was to get Tozawa ready.
Yeah, maybe. And that just dragged on so long that I kind of started to lose interest. Last caller of the day is 409. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Yes, this is Frederick. The area code is from Texas, but I live in Anaheim.
Oh, very good. What's on your mind today?
Well, first of all, thanks for bringing me on. I came on a little bit late. Just two things. I really enjoyed the match between Dean Ambrose and The Miz last night.
Yeah.
But I feel like Dean's act is kind of, I don't know, for me it's just getting kind of stale. I had, like, really high hopes for him, and, you know, he got the title, and then the run just didn't work. At least in my opinion, it just didn't work. So I almost feel like there needs to be something maybe something added to his act or something to bring it to the next level. So I was thinking, I don't know if this is a good idea. I want you guys' opinion on it. What if they pair him with sort of like, you know, Renee Young, sort of like The Miz did with his chick Maryse, and that sort of, you know, gave him a fresh breath of air. So what do you guys think about that? Possibly could lead to a mixed tag match at SummerSlam. So that's question number one. Number two is Elias Sampson. Do you think he should win the Intercontinental Championship in quick order, like within the next 2 to 3 months before the act goes stale? I like the act a lot, by the way. You know, I think it's annoying as hell, which is probably the point. But I feel like if he doesn't get a championship, I feel like quick, you know, people may just sour over him. But anyways. Those are two questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Let's start with the first one, Will. Dean and Renee, mixed tag match. A little bit. I mean, Renee hosts Raw Talk. You associate her more with SmackDown, I think, because she's kind of embraced the role of, they make me do Raw Talk, but I'm, you know, talking smack is where it's at. But, you know, is there a way to do this? Would you want to see it? Where do you stand on a mixed tag?
I'm not really in favor of it. I think there are better ways to freshen up Dean Ambrose's character, and I actually think the main way to freshen it up is do a Shield reunion this summer and have Dean be the guy that breaks all that up and send Dean off on a path, give Roman something to do. Again, we got to keep Roman busy until WrestleMania, so Roman then has a ready-made built-in feud, and they can get all intense and bloodlusty. You also have the feud, you know, you can go back to Seth and Dean with the roles reversed and kind of see what Dean has in that role. I think a lot of us expect him to really shine and perform well based on what he did on the Indies and what he did kind of in developmental before the Shield formed. And I would hope that he would, but it's been a while, and it's time to see if Dean still has that. And I think that's where Dean can really get freshened up. But part of me thinks Renee Young is more valuable to WWE programming than Dean Ambrose, so I don't ruin Renee to try and make Dean. That's kind of my thoughts on putting them together.
Yeah, I guess I don't really have a desire to see Renee wrestle. I mean, if they do it, it's okay. You know, it's an attraction. I'm with you. I'd rather see Dean eventually turn heel. It feels like it's time. It just kind of, you know, he means something. People like him, yes, but I'd rather he turn while they still feel that way. It's just the act feels a little bit flat presently, and I'm curious to see where they go next with him, because you would think, aside from the rematch he may or may not get, it's certainly time to move on from Ambrose and Miz. We've been seeing this for far too long. As far as the Drifter, I would have thought, you know, maybe they're going to do that if Ambrose had come out of this match still as champion. But now that Miz is the IC title holder, I mean, he could be a transitional champion, whatever. But I know technically the Miz hit the Drifter to cause a DQ, playing mind games with Ambrose, and they could go back to that if they wanted to. But, I mean, the Drifter's a heel, the Miz is a heel, so I don't know that that's going to happen. But any thoughts on Elias Sampson and the IC title, and just where do you think he sits? Is he doing better on the main roster than he was in NXT?
I think he's doing better on the main roster than in NXT. I think Elias Sampson is a character more built for the main roster than he was for NXT. And unless he was going to get over in NXT as like a meme, the way guys like Ty Dillinger kind of did in NXT, where they were a mascot or a meme type of thing. Like the NXT crowd could have just as easily started singing along with Elias Sampson on a weekly basis, or booing him. Like that was probably a 50-50 chance that they had there. And he's really lucky he got booed out of that place, because he wouldn't get over the same way on the main roster. I don't think it's time to put a title on Elias Sampson. I would wait a little bit longer to do that, but I do think he's in that Intercontinental Championship mix, and WWE should kind of give him a feud of some sort, even a short one that just gets you through Great Balls of Fire, to see what Elias Sampson has. I think they could, after that, I could say, yeah, let's put a title on him or not, but I think WWE should test him out a little bit more first.
A couple of quick notes before we close out. Assassin 5 points out that he's a .NET member, that if Joe should end up beating Brock and becoming the Universal Champion, he says he would be the first person to have held the WWE World Championship, the Ring of Honor Championship, and the TNA Championship. Do we trust Assassin with that? I think he's right. I think he's accurate on that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what other guys it would have been possible to do that. AJ was never a Ring of Honor World Champion, right?
No.
Because AJ
was the only other guy
I'd think of. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Bryan was never a TNA champion. Yeah, that's cool. Oh,
Seth
Austin
Rollins
Aries
was never...
could do that, too.
That's true. Yeah, I mean,
if he got heavier.
Guys... Yeah, or they suddenly decided to kind of give him a main, you know, regular non-205 live kind of push, but I don't think that's happening. And then I already had some weird thing about the Big Dog and the Moon Dog and Pit Bulls bringing a bone to the ring, so you can save that one for Q&A, Assassin. But Nelson checked in via email, and he said he wants to know, do you think all these pay-per-views that eventually some fans are going to say they don't need the network anymore, since a lot of these shows feel like an episode of Raw or SmackDown, it has lost a lot of the special feel, in his opinion. He says, yeah, I'm sure some in the company would probably say, why are you complaining? You're getting all this stuff for $10 a month. But I still want these shows to feel like they matter and aren't just a Raw episode. I don't care. He says, I would pay even more than $10 a month if they protected their special events more. Do you feel like that's an issue, Will?
I think the bigger issue WWE needs to watch out for is people saying, I can just watch the network. I don't need Raw and SmackDown. Because they've kind of made it seem like the network is where the big things happen. The network is where you get WrestleMania. And if I'm, you know, Johnny Cable consumer, and I'm looking at, you know, my $60 a month cable bill, and cord cutting sounds really good, look at all these services I could use, I could put that money to work in a different way. And while WWE Network is only $10, and, well, every other week I'm getting a three-hour special event from one of the brands, and NXT's on here, and I got 205 Live. Like, I have enough wrestling on a weekly basis on the network to satiate my needs, that's something WWE needs to watch out for. I think more than people saying, I'll just watch Raw and SmackDown and not the network. I've believed the better way to watch WWE programming probably for the last 2 years has been just having the network. But that's me as well, and I know that is not for everyone.
And I will say that even though, like, the last paper we had Backlash, you know, you look at it and go, Jinder Mahal's challenging for the title, Breezango's challenging for the tag titles, and let's say you were down on Extreme Rules just looking at the lineup or the build. Well, you had a Jinder Mahal world title win. Now, it may not excite everybody, but it's still, I mean, a pretty big happening. Last night, you had the tag titles change hands. You had the number one contender crowned. I think we have another title change. Yeah, the Intercontinental title changed hands last night as well. So I think they are, even if it's, you know, it's not just WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Rumble, and I guess we have to throw Survivor Series in there just like because of tradition. I think they're doing a good job of making these pay-per-views feel like that's where most of the major events do happen. And so I'm with you, Will. I side more with you that, yeah, it's the week-to-week television that I think is suffering, and they're just scaring some people away. I think the ratings show that. People like to, well, there's cord cutters and that. The rating, keep in mind, that is just a percentage of all the people watching television. So the cord cutters don't count in that. And so, you know, the ratings are definitely an issue. Last thing I want to talk to you about today, because the next time we are scheduled to be on is the day after Father's Day, the day after Money in the Bank. It'll be June 19th is when we are back live on ProWrestling.net Live. And so I want to know where you sit today as far as who wins these men's and women's Money in the Bank matches.
Ooh, that is a tough question. I think the women's one, I want to say it's going to be Charlotte because WWE likes to have Charlotte in these first matches. They like to have Charlotte kind of be that groundbreaking human in all of these women's matches. So I'm leaning Charlotte on the women's side, although I think Natalya is definitely a good pick and a dark horse for that and probably a more interesting decision to be made. On the men's side, I'm really unsure, and part of it is the WWE Championship it's a really interesting situation it's in because how long do you want to keep the title on Jinder Mahal? What's WWE going to do at Money in the Bank with that? And I look at, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura as an obvious kind of, hey, we could put the briefcase on him guy, but they could also just put the title on him. Like, Shinsuke could challenge Jinder on an episode of SmackDown, no briefcase involved, and win the title, and I don't think too many people would be upset, other than just the lack of story told going into it. So I don't necessarily see that happening. AJ's got to be a guy they can look at. And you've mentioned Baron Corbin, and I do think it could be kind of a building period for Baron Corbin where he gets that briefcase and he gets to walk around with it for a little bit, and it adds to what he's doing, which could be really good. So today I will pick I'll pick Shinsuke Nakamura to win Money in the Bank right now, but that's absolutely subject to change when Jake and I sit down that week and do a pay-per-view preview.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm sure my opinion will change. I'm with you. Jake made a really good case for Natalya the last time I did audio with him, but you made a really good case as well for Charlotte. They do like her, you know, making history and being able to boast about all the things she's done to make history. So she's certainly high on that list. The case for Corbin, it's kind of simple. As I've said, let's see, internet darling, internet darling, internet darling, internet darling, former internet darling and Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin. So Baron Corbin wins. That's not exactly my formula for choosing this, but with Nakamura, if he wins it, I hope it's because they plan to go aggressively with him in terms of if he wins Money in the Bank, he's going to go the proper way, the babyface way. He's not going to be opportunistic and sneaky about it. He is going to announce when he wants that title shot. He's going to do it at SummerSlam. That would be fine, but I don't know that they want to go there. Will, it almost seems to me like with John Cena returning on July 4th, I wonder if we're getting that at SummerSlam as John Cena. He's back, and he's challenging Jinder Mahal for the championship at SummerSlam.
That would not surprise me at all, doing John Cena kind of, you know, defending the honor of America in some way on July 4th and then having Cena versus Mahal at SummerSlam where Jinder could drop the title to John Cena, give him the 17th one, and let people feel real good about that. And then, you know, Cena, I think last year he worked the pay-per-view or maybe two pay-per-views after SummerSlam. Maybe he does that again where he ends up working another pay-per-view or two after SummerSlam before he takes another hiatus until, I would assume, Royal Rumble season.
Well, Will, thank you very much for joining me today. Thank you all to all the callers. I really appreciate Rabbit, Fairplay, Mike, Kevin, Frederick, I hope I didn't forget anybody, and also the members who submitted some questions because they had some work conflicts, J-Moss, Assassin, Nelson. Thank you to everybody who took the time to listen to the show. Again, Will and I are scheduled to be back the day after Money in the Bank, June 19th. Just remember the Mondays after WWE pay-per-view events. We are live on pwaudio.net, prowrestling.net live, 3 Central, 4 Eastern is our scheduled time. And we always take your calls, of course, during those shows. And then SummerSlam, I assume there'll be a couple of special editions here and there as well for the live shows. But we have a few more events here to get through before SummerSlam. And so we'll just take it one Monday at a time right now. They're throwing so many damn pay-per-views at us, I can't even keep track of what's what anymore. But again, a big thank you to everybody who took the time to call in, send in questions, whatever the case was, always appreciated. And, of course, you can follow us online at Pro Wrestling Net. And if you had any questions about the membership that I mentioned earlier, feel free to email me at dotnetjason@gmail.com, dotnetjason@gmail.com. And check back late tonight or maybe on your drive Monday because coming out of WWE Raw, I will have my Raw audio review available as Tuesday's All Access Daily Podcast at pwaudio.net. So until next time, everybody, thank you for listening. Take care.